Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, it's Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN. Well, Dr. Ian Smith is a best-selling author, including his most recent book, Mind Over Weight, a new book coming out in April called Fast Burn. He's the host of the Emmy Award-winning syndicated TV series, The Doctors. Plus, he's got a new novel out, all based in around Chicagoland, called The Spoken. Dr. Ian joins us tonight. Hey, Dr. Ian.
Hey, Dave. Thanks so much. I'm glad to talk to you, as always.
Absolutely. Same here. You know, I want to talk, you know, where everyone's talking about the vaccine, and I'm actually scheduled finally to get shot one next week. But there are three vaccines out there right now, but there's at least two more in progress. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, two plus, you know, and you know, I have to be honest with you. I mean, the three that we have right now are really good. The two that are in progress, we'll see what happens. I don't know how fast they'll be able to get it to market. But, you know, given the three that we have now and the options, I mean, most of the country can be vaccinated by these three vaccines very safely and probably by midsummer.
That's pretty amazing. And I know there with this Johnson & Johnson one, since the last time we spoke, that one's out there now. No major side effects, I don't believe, but struggling, I think, to reach their goal of 20 million shots delivered by the end of the month. I think they're only at 4 million today, so they might have to pick up the pace just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when they make these predictions, it's kind of, it's almost a guess, in my opinion. I mean, they're obviously looking at data, and they're looking at how they've done historically, what they can do, but there's so many variables that go into it, from the logisticals of distribution to getting it to the right places, also to make sure that the sites where they're delivering vaccinations, that they're staffed properly, what kind of flow can they really handle. So there's so many variables. I don't think anyone can really say with, you know, great accuracy what the number will be, but you can always say what you'd like to get, yeah, you know, vaccinated, what those numbers are.
Now, the AstraZeneca vaccine, an independent panel of experts said there's encouraging results, but they might have relied on outdated information. What is that really referring to?
I mean, I personally think there are a lot of problems with the AstraZeneca vaccine, and many of their problems are optics, you know, uh-huh, how it looks to the public. First of all, the idea of the blood clots that they found, there were people who died of blood clots after getting the vaccine. They kind of equivocated and said, well, we don't know if the vaccine caused the blood clots. Then they've said, well, it may be a situation where certain people do have increased risk of blood clots in the brain as a result of the vaccine, but that number is very low. Now they're saying that some of the data that they offered from the studies to see if it was effective or not and its safety profile, that some of that data wasn't the full complement of data, so they didn't give all the information. They just gave some of the information. Regardless of what it is, I think from an optics standpoint to the public, that's already vaccine-wary and vaccine-hesitant, that this is a major problem. And, you know, I, for example, if someone said to me, you know, you're going to take the AstraZeneca vaccine, I personally, as a physician and just as a regular citizen, would have issues. You know, and there are other safer options that don't have the issues of this vaccine. I just think it's a big problem for the company, and it's a big problem for whomever is trying to convince people to take it.
What I find fascinating is that, you know, everybody was affected differently who had COVID. I mean, there was always a different story in there. Same thing with the vaccinations. Like, I've heard people after they got their second shot, you know, didn't feel that great, felt sluggish. It went away pretty quickly. My dad's 80. He got the second shot, and I was concerned. I was concerned about him. And, you know, I checked in with him every couple hours. He's like, I'm fine. Finally, the next morning, I'm like, how you feeling? He's like, yeah, my arm was a little sore, but otherwise I'm good. So it really does affect people differently, but it's all safe.
Yes. So I had the vaccine, and I had no side effects whatsoever after the second shot. Most people who are going to have side effects, they have it after the second shot. I had none whatsoever, not even a sore arm.
Wow.
But, you know, that was my experience. Mm-hmm. And everyone's experience may be different. Some have severe side effects, some have mild side effects. For some, it lasts 24 hours. For some, up to 48 hours. I mean, it's a, as you say, it's a broad array, which is why even though people speak about what may happen, everyone has to understand that these are generalities, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to happen to you. But the good news is that the side effects are self-limited, that they will, in 99% of cases that have been reported, they go away within, you know, 2 days. And so, and then people report feeling brand new again after the side effects. They may not feel great during the side effects, but then they're back to normal. So I think that people should realize if you are one of those unfortunate enough to get side effects, they will go away and they won't have long-term effects.
Another hot topic out there is a little bit about, you know, so many healthcare workers are resisting the vaccine. And you hear stories like this all the time. Like, is that cause for concern? And, you know, where are they coming from? I mean, you're a physician, you're a doctor. So you went and got it. Why are so many people resisting it, though?
No, that's a great question. I'm a little confused at why healthcare workers who are supposedly steeped and educated in science and understand basic science, I don't understand why they're resisting it. I mean, anyone who understands, and I'm not talking about complicated science. Mm-hmm. This is basic science for those of us in healthcare. Anyone who understands basic science knows when it comes to a vaccine like this and when it comes to a virus like this, the only way for us as a world to get out of this situation is through vaccinations, period. There's no other way. Well, that's not true. The other way is to allow the vaccine to run its course, to allow the infection, the virus, to run its course through the population and just keep killing people. Eventually, if you say, okay, no one takes the vaccinations anymore, those who are unvaccinated are going to be at risk. And you look at the percentages of those who get the virus and those who die, and you just say, okay, we're going to lose, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 million people. That's a way to get through it. That's not the way I want to get through it. I want to get through it with saving those lives, having the discomfort that may or may not happen from the vaccine. So I can't, Dave, honestly, I can't explain why healthcare workers are doing that. It's confusing.
It's confusing to people who are on the fence about this, you know. So it's sending really some troubling messages to the general public when you read things like this.
Well, this is the overall problem with and why I believe that this has been bungled so badly, which is that there's no, you know, unanimity as far as, you know, the virus and the treatment and the vaccine, and everyone kind of is on a different page. And in a situation like this, you can't have everyone on a different page. We have to be on the same page. Because it really, this is one of those situations, the only time in my life where we need everyone to think about strangers, to think about the welfare of strangers, and to also trust strangers. You know, if you and I are going into a grocery store, I have some trust that whoever the stranger also is in the grocery store, that they've been safe, that they're practicing, you know, proper protocol, because I don't want them to be infected because it increases my risk of infection. The other part I want to say is that, you know, people have to be patient. One of the things that is going to keep this around longer is people rushing to open things too widely, too quickly. It's only going to backfire. And, you know, the numbers here in Illinois, down very low, they're starting to creep back up.
They are.
Well, you know, people who understand this are not surprised whatsoever, because I always say, why not give it a cushion? If we say, for example, our benchmark is 2% before we start doing something, let's actually go down to 1% before we do it. Give ourselves that cushion to see if we can absorb what may happen as with an uptick. Instead, everyone's, you know, it's almost like, you know, people who jump the gun, you know, on a race, right? Everyone's at the starting line and you're so anxious to get off that you jump the gun. Well, same thing here. Everyone is so anxious opening up that as soon as we get to 2, boom, you know, well, no, take a breather. We're at 2, great. Let's get down to 1, 1.5. So I just think that, you know, people are going to have to exhibit more patience and they're going to have to be smarter. And even after we get all these vaccinations out, there's still going to be a time that we need masks. I mean, everyone has to have the long-term view on this. And rushing to get things open, I understand people are missing money, losing money, businesses are going out. I understand that. But here's the what's worse to me is you open, then close, open, then close. It's like a whack-a-mole.
It is. Absolutely is. I was going to say, too, I mean, I'm out and about and having dinner out and drinks or whatever. You know, even in the places that I feel, you know, are safe and they're taking care of things, I can tell everyone's got a high confidence level. Like it almost feels like 2019 again.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not there. I'm telling you, we're not there. And let me tell you something. As long as other states are open, as long as other states have different types of policies, someone had said to me earlier today, they said, you know, when another state next to yours or any other state has different policies about masks and about safety protocol, it's like everyone being in a pool and someone saying, well, I'm going to go pee in the corner. Well, you're not safe with someone peeing in the corner. You're all in the same pool. It eventually is going to get to you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Wow, that's a great analogy. Great analogy. We're talking to Dr. Ian Smith of TV's The Doctors. There's more with him next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you here on 720 WGN. We're talking to Dr. Ian Smith of TV's The Doctors. I want to address the pandemic weight gains that many people have had over the last year and what you can do to eat better and get ready for summer. But I wanted to start with a feature that you just had on The Doctors about anxiety surrounding your digital devices. And you listed a bunch of statistics, 3.6 billion Google searches each day. Each day on YouTube, there are 30 million active users, 2.2 billion on Facebook. Half the world is active on social media for an average of 25 minutes a day. And some signs that your digital time is causing undue stress and anxiety, you know, there's ways you can do that. You're going to feel anxious, like mood dips. I mean, there's a lot of side effects to being on your phone, your iPad, all these digital devices all day.
100%. I mean, you know, people really have to understand that we are in a mode of digital overload. And while digital devices and social media, while we use those things to stay current and to stay up to date, you can also use them too much. And they can also, you know, create anxiety. Seeing, you know, something happen in another location, you know, can cause anxiety. Seeing store fights can cause anxiety. There are all kinds of things that you see on social media that, you know, can be a problem. And, you know, people have to understand that you have to sometimes have this digital disconnect, that the physical process of being online and being connected all the time, that can be anxiety provoking. But then also what you're seeing and what you're hearing, rumors and conspiracy theories. I mean, you know, it's nonstop. And even if you're not someone who buys into this type of a barter of information, even if you're not someone who buys into it, you still are vulnerable to seeing it. And in some way, even if it's subconscious, it can impact you.
Well, and just the alerts on my phone, that's one thing I found myself doing right after the holidays, is all the little buzzes and beeps and dings that I had for news items and stuff. I had to turn them off. That was actually like I had to grab my phone. Like, what is this? I have to grab my phone. There must be something for me to look at. It's that, you know, your online time is taking precedent and you're avoiding work, or work around the house, or work while you're at work, neglecting your own self-care in some of this. And again, some of it's comparing yourself to others. They have a better life than I do, or whatever it might be, you know, and especially with the teenagers, man. I mean, that's just an emotional roller coaster being online. But how do you tell somebody, or how do you tell yourself, what are the steps to disconnect?
Well, I think that you have to set parameters, you know. You got to say, you know, for the first hour that I'm awake, I'm not going to go on a digital device.
Yeah.
You know, an hour and a half before going to sleep, I'm turning it off, period. I mean, that's the way to start, is you have to set parameters with yourself and say, I'm going to take a digital break. And these are the hard guidelines. Unless there's an emergent situation that happens and you may need to be on. But, you know, people have to understand that they have to take this kind of, you know, approach to it, you know, that you have to say that I'm not going to do it, and these are my guidelines. I think that's the best way to start.
I look at the phone as like the cigarettes were in the 1960s and 50s. Like, as soon as you get up, you grab your phone, you grab your pack of cigarettes. As soon as you go to sleep, you have one less smoke, put your pack on the side of the bed. That's what it feels like. And you're supposed to actually turn off your phone at least 30 to 45 minutes before you go to sleep, because your mind is just racing and all this. And this could also lead to sleep issues.
More than that, Dave, you got to turn off an hour before going to sleep, because what people don't realize is that the digital stimulation is hyper-stimulatory to to your brain. And even if you've turned it off, the fact that you've used it within the last hour, it has the brain waves and the brain activity is still almost like you're still on the machine, on the device, and it keeps you awake. It prevents you from falling asleep. It prevents you from getting quality sleep. I mean, there's tons of research about the need for people to get off these devices well in advance of trying to go to sleep. And people don't realize that. People try to use these devices to go to sleep, and that's just not the way to do it.
What's your view on, you know, stress, anxiety? What's your view on melatonin, like adding a little melatonin before you go to sleep? Because your body doesn't always generate maybe what you need, and subbing a little of that out is okay, isn't it?
Yeah, melatonin is our sleep aid for sure. It's produced naturally by the body. But you're right. Some people do for a multitude of reasons. Some people don't produce enough of it in order for it to be effective. And so, you know, I definitely recommend people trying to add some melatonin. It's safe. You know, it's not going to be a problem. And I think we should look at, you know, their natural, you know, melatonin supplements that they could buy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some people buy it with CBD. That's helpful. So the different types of things that you can do.
On to the weight gains that I keep hearing people about. Like when I tell people, and this is the truth, that since last maybe July or August, I've lost 35 pounds and I've kept it off for the first time ever. I would jump and then I would go back and eat better and exercise. But I am like, I've got such a good routine down. Like I feel good every day. It's a stress relief knowing I have a timeline that I get to work out. Like that's almost a destination for me now because I can burn off some steam. But there's a lot of folks out there that, you know, various studies found adults gain nearly 2 pounds per month during a 4-month stretch that, you know, corresponded with the lockdowns. That could add up to 20 pounds. Like the quarantine 15 is what everyone's talking about, like the freshman 15. You know, it's a kind of a concern. So how do you start, you know, watching that as we're getting into summer and trying to trim some of that off?
Well, I think the first thing is just to acknowledge. I think people have to be honest and open and say that we've had a tough time and that people unfortunately have eaten ways that are different. They haven't exercised as well for a multitude of reasons. So first point is acknowledging that you've gained maybe not 15, maybe you've gained 10 pounds or 8 pounds. Mm-hmm. But, you know, after that, then it's about making small changes, right? I don't suggest making drastic changes. Those typically don't last for a long period of time effectively. But people have to make small changes. People have to do things like, you know, decide that half their plate is going to be fruits and vegetables. They're going to eat more whole grains. I mean, these are small, simple things that people can start right away. No more soda or reducing the amount of soda, limiting our alcohol intake to maybe 2 or 3 times a week. When you start making those small adjustments, then you start getting into a structure. I mean, my new book, Fast Burn, for example, is a 9-week program that every week is different on the plan, and it uses different types of intermittent fasting. It uses clean eating, which means reducing processed ingredients. But the idea is that some people need structure. It's not just about making, for some people, it's about making small changes. For others, you need a real plan that tells you what you need to eat and when you need to eat it in order for it to be effective.
Well, and you can limit some of those little things that, you know, you don't have to have both sides of the bagel. You don't have to have 10 cookies. You can have one. And that's how I've limited myself a little bit. Like I love chocolate covered almonds. Do I have to have a bag? No. Can I have 2 and feel good about it? Yeah. Cause I don't want to feel like crap the next day. I don't want to gain that weight back that seemed like it was such a burden for me. So it does require a major mental change on how you eat and snack.
Yeah. And I think that people should be excited about the change. I mean, you know, when I write my plans, I really try to write plans that don't deprive people of good eating and healthy, tasty eating. And I think that people automatically think that eating better necessarily means not having fun. And it's just not true.
Right. Absolutely not. Dr. Ian Smith, catch him on TV's The Doctors. And for more on his books, Fast Burn's the new book coming out in April. He's got some Fast Burn challenges out there. You can visit DrIanSmith.com. Always a pleasure, my friend, hanging out with you, and have a great rest of your weekend.
Yes, and Dad, I also want to say I give away free little plans on my Instagram page. If you're on Instagram, go to @DrIanSmith, spell the doctor out, I-A-N Smith, and you'll be able to see some of my free plans and workouts you can follow at home.
Wonderful. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right, man.
Take care. All right. Top stories are next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.